The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Happy final day of 2025 and 2026 college athletics. It's Monday, and you're on the line.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Yes, welcome in, welcome in. It is the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the ESPN studio, having a good time here on this Monday afternoon. Happy post-Father's Day to everybody out there. What a weekend it was, being able to see a little bit of family, hang out with some family, take it slow, and watch a whole lot of college baseball. And if that's the worst thing about the weekend, then that sounds like a pretty dang good weekend in my books. I got my man Trip Upton here with me in the studio as well, sir. Happy Monday. We're sitting here looking at the TV off to my right, off to your left, and you're now watching somebody who has now scored more goals in the World Cup than anybody in the country. He then adds one more to it, and crazy to think that like a week and a half ago he was in Lee County, Alabama.
Happy Monday. Yeah, that's so crazy. Lionel Messi gets a goal to go here late in the contest to go ahead and ice the game versus Austria. A beautiful, he took it all the way down the field at a beautiful pass. One shot doesn't go, two shot, he picks it up, dribbles left, and puts it in the other side of the net for a goal.
He's about to take a free kick as well. No way he gets a hat trick. His second hat trick in as many games.
That would be sensational. No, he is. I mean, it is. I feel really bad if you're.
Do it. Ronaldo.
Almost. It was just left. Oh, my goodness. But yes, happy, happy Monday. Again, I got a lot of good rest this weekend. Sound like you got to see some family and. There's a lot to talk about today, isn't there?
There is, my goodness. A whole lot to talk about. You mentioned it in the intro, or you heard it rather in the intro, the final day of kind of the entire 2025-2026 season. It will come to a close tonight in Omaha. Why would you want it any other way? The fairy tale ending with the best place on earth, in my opinion, in Omaha, Nebraska. What a College World Series it has been. And that's what we start the show with, diving in today. Game one. Recap, game two recap, and then we also have our game three predictions. I will go ahead and apologize. I said that one way or another, we would not be talking about a game three. We would be discussing a sweep one way or the other, and I predicted North Carolina to sweep Arkansas, so I obviously still have North Carolina winning. You had Arkansas beating North Carolina in three, did you not?
Well, I'd be concerned if Arkansas is playing today.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I would also be very concerned.
I had Oklahoma winning in game three. I did think that Oklahoma would – I had the games flipped, though. I thought Oklahoma would lose game one and climb all the way back. They did the opposite. They won game one, fell yesterday, and now we have a winner-take-all game tonight.
How dare I think that Scott Foster wouldn't be behind the plates? I mean, the extender trying to make this
Seriously.
A game three. Why would I think it would go any other way? So, no, Oklahoma and North Carolina. So we'll be able to dive into a lot of that here this afternoon. Also, some breaking news in the college basketball world as Dusty May leaves Michigan to go to the NBA. We will talk about that, just the move itself, and what that means for the rest of college basketball and kind of the snowman or the snowball effect, if you will, just in terms of if Michigan decides to hire outside their program, what that could look like. I know for the time being they were mentioning having one of the assistants being coaching from within, being the interim head coach. But what could that look like in the big picture? Is Michigan wanting to continue their dominance, or are they going to take a mini step back and try and find somebody? We'll be able to talk a lot about that and then how that could possibly affect the Auburn Tigers as well. And then some entertainment news that we feel like we can't help but mention in hour number one as well, before a loaded hour number two talking all things Auburn football. And so really, really excited to be with you here this afternoon. We appreciate everybody for being here with us on this Monday afternoon. And if you would like to be a part of any conversation here this afternoon, phone lines are open for the first hour and a half before we get to our Monday guest, Mr. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. You can do so at 334-321-3. 1390. You can get your thoughts out on anything that happened over the weekend, anything that's set up to happen throughout the week, or anything on your mind on the sports world. Again, give us a call, 334-321-1390. The text box is always open as well, with that change being the 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1OTL. And partner, games one and two, absolutely incredible. A win to either team, and how else could you draw it up? Game three of the College World Series between North Carolina and Oklahoma, just like we predicted, ACC versus SEC.
Right.
I just don't think many people thought that it was going to be the Sooners of Oklahoma, but they've proven they belong. They took game one. They fell in game two. Let's recap how it happened.
Right. I think that, you know, the big thing is that both – it's not like it's been a – It's a true toss-up tonight, with game one being a just Oklahoma was able to dominate in that one. Yes, UNC did score early, but they ended up losing by 6 runs. And then it was the exact opposite on Saturday, with their backs against the wall. North Carolina goes out there and plays phenomenal. OU scores early and did not score again. North Carolina was able to pull it. And so it's a true toss-up tonight.
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny because it's like, oh, okay, well, it's the College World Series. Like, yeah, it's supposed to be a toss-up, but there's usually
right.
still a clear favorite, right? And I think North Carolina is that favorite. Looking at it right now, I see minus 158 based off of the unnamed thing that we don't participate in or have any knowledge of in the state of Alabama.
If you were in Lubbock, Texas, you might want to pay attention to that number.
Sure. Or we're doing workouts for a supplemental draft based off, you know.
But sure.
Again, we have no knowledge of that. But North Carolina, just based off of the analytics and the projections, a relatively decent-sized favorite. But again, they were the heavy favorites, especially after some of the crazy things that have gone on throughout the regionals and then the super regionals. They were the favorites working their way into the final eight to Omaha. And it is. It was a crazy trend that you've seen throughout these games. It's the wild stat of both losing teams. That was North Carolina in game one and Oklahoma in game two. They scored in the first inning and then did not score after that. That is such a wild concept to me. Game one, North Carolina scored 3 in the first inning. They lost 9-3. Game two, Oklahoma scored 2 in the first and did not score again. And so you talk about the adjustments. You talk all about, my goodness, in the baseball world of, if you can get your starter out of the first inning, you feel like you can then go back and you understand the mentality of the pitching staff so far. Sometimes it's the first inning. Sometimes it's the first time through the lineup. But there's always going to be those risk calculations in the first inning of, okay, here is my strength. Is this what I go after? Is this what I force the other team to hit? Or do I see that their weakness is possibly the changeup or the off-speed or whatever else it is? And, okay, we're going to start with that. And then you see after an inning or two how that offense is treating your arms and treating their mentality at the plate. And I feel like that's just a credit to not only really, really good pitching staff, but really good coaching as
right.
well, just based off of making those adjustments on the mound in real time. If you go heavy fastball, all of a sudden you start going, okay, let's try and get ahead with a first pitch breaking ball. Then all of a sudden that fastball makes it 0-2, makes it 1-2, and you're still in the driver's seat. You feel like that's a little bit of what's happened in game one and game two to make it where, okay, yeah, game three, winner take all. It really is anybody's game.
Right. And I think that the big thing to look at is kind of what the pitching is going to look like for both of these teams. Looking at, I have Oklahoma's pitch availability pulled up from I guess, what, unnamed baseball, college baseball app that's been very popular this year.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yes. Yep. So looking at, I mean, Cord Rager had a phenomenal Friday night. That was – or Saturday, which was great. I mean, he went 100 pitches. You're not going to see him. Xander Macarius, 92 pitches yesterday. You're not going to see him. His brother, LJ.
Yep.
He pitched in against Georgia late, had a okay outing. It was shaky to start and was able to finish off very well, and then pitched a little on Saturday. I would not be surprised. I know he's pitched 80 pitches in this week. If in a relief role, I mean, you can't – if you have anything in the tank, you've got to let it go tonight.
And that's what's so cool to me, and we'll dive into this a little bit here in the second segment, but – the fact that your entire bullpen, your entire staff is wide open. You probably won't go Rager, which you mentioned again after going 100 pitches yesterday. But the fact of if he walks up to you and goes, "Coach, let me get four outs," how are you going to tell him no?
Yamamoto.
Especially in just a situation like that. Yeah, you see it all the time in the World Series of a starter that started maybe game three or game four, all of a sudden comes out in game six to try and close it. And it's like, okay, give me two innings of, instead of sitting 98, sit 94 if you can, and just work with the strike zone and see what you got. Because, okay, after that, you can give your arm a little bit of a rest, but you're going to win a national championship.
Right, and looking at the other side of it, I mean, Cade Glober was another pitcher that was very, very, very effective yesterday. He went 65 after pitching 45 earlier in the week. And only two pitchers, I mean, according to what this website has, that I could be wrong, two pitchers used between Caden Glober and Ryan Lynch. Mm-hmm. So even more so for North Carolina, you know, I doubt you're going to see Jason DeCaro after having an 83 pitch outing in game one. But I mean, Matthew Majeus, Folger Boas, I don't think you're going to see Cameron Padgett, but he's only pitched 22 pitches after pitching on Wednesday or Thursday and Saturday. But I think it's going to really come down to whose bullpen is healthier, but also who's going to be willing to go, okay, even though I pitched, you know, if how Glauber is able to pitch yesterday, if he's like, let me get three.
Yeah.
And if you think he can and his bullpen looks good, why not? You know, that it's so rare that you can be in a position to win a national championship in the sport of, in any sport, but college baseball specifically, where you only have to focus on one game. It's not, oh, well, we have to plan for a game two, or, oh, we have to plan for a game three now. It's just give me one. Give me one game, and these guys are competitors. They're going to show up, and if it's that's what it takes, and it, again, you said it, even if it's not 98, it's 94, and work with the strike zone, and you know maybe you see a little bit more of your breaking ball, that's worth it, because at the end of the day, only one team is going to bring back the trophy from Omaha, and it's going to be the team that leaves everything possible on the field.
It's funny because this brings back to way back in my day of me playing college ball. And we had a guy who threw a complete game in our our series or our conference championship. And he threw a complete game. We won it, I believe it was 3-1 in game one. And then we had it was the doubleheader game one, and then the game three, if necessary, was the following day. And threw a complete game in game one, dominated. I think, again, it was 3-1. It was a solo shot in like the third inning, but was just absolutely dominant. And we were up, 4-2, I believe, in game two. And one of the guys that, I mean, one of the best teammates that I've ever played with. Funny enough, he's with the Savannah Bananas now.
Sure.
And so you see that the talent level, despite my lack of true love for the Savannah Bananas, but that's a story for another day.
I think we'll agree on that.
But just from the overall talent perspective, but again, was one of the guys that was one of the best teammates, but it was like, okay, when it's his day to go on the mound, you don't talk to him. And you just let him sit there. And so seeing that in game one, seeing the dominance, we hit the seventh inning, and we were up 4-2, and he walked up to Coach, again, after throwing a complete game, all nine innings, 100-plus pitches, and said, "Coach, give me the ball." Mm. And the coach looked at him and was like, "What?" And he said, "I'm going the final three, give me the ball." And it was like, How do you tell that guy no? How do you tell somebody like
unless
that no?
Unless there's a like pitch restriction like there is in the AHSAA where you look at, you know, like for example what happened with was it Spain Park in Northridge this year?
Yes.
Where
yeah.
you were like if he pitches a certain like a like
they if, waited like 24 hours, but it had to be an actual like calendar day or something like that.
I thought of a pitch restriction. It was like the rule is 120, he went 125 or something weird. But like stuff like that, like unless there is a restriction where you have to do that, how do you say no?
Yeah, no. And so it was like, are you sure? And he was like, yeah. And he was like, I'm not going to throw warm up pitches. I'm going to the mound. And the coach was like, okay. And we won and we swept, Pembroke, I believe.
Oh, there we go.
And so, really, really cool. Just a story from that side, but it's something, again, you don't see very often, no. but when your captain, one of your guys has the leadership ability like that and almost has the coach, you're not taking me out of this game. You're not doing, you know, whatever. There's very few people that have that sort of say, especially in a game, to kind of overrule a coach. But credit to him for being able to do that. And again, he went 7, 8, and 9, and I think he faced the minimum throughout it. And so
right.
Seeing stuff like that is really, really cool. And it's what you may need to see here this evening.
Yeah. I mean, that's what makes baseball special, where in no other sport do you have players that are limited by what day of the week they play.
Yeah, it's not like you have three quarterback. Well, let me take that back because here at the Plains, sometimes we sure. did have three quarterbacks.
It might have been nice to have certain quarterbacks on throw restrictions. That might have led to some more wins, but.
But usually you don't have three quarterbacks, right. And it's like, okay, well, he threw 45 passes last Sunday. Last Saturday, we're gonna give this guy a shot
Or like, hey, he played 40 minutes he played 30 minutes in a basketball game, the point guard, and it's no, you can't play. I'm sorry, like yeah. we don't want to get you hurt. In an era where
you better not be talking minutes restrictions, Tripp.
No, not at all.
Because that's not a thing.
That's not a thing. No, it's not a thing at all. And everyone plays the correct amount of minutes. And
at 100%.
At 100%, exactly. But no, I think that there's no other sport that has that possibility like baseball with pitchers, where yeah, it is limited, but when they're able to power through that, there's just something phenomenal. I guess the closest you could get is like an injury on like a Kobe Bryant tearing his Achilles walking up and hitting both free throws.
Sure.
Or like Chad Pennington back in the day from Marshall breaking his leg and his O-lineman I think it was Pennington carrying him down the field as on like a 2-minute drill. It's stuff like that where you're not going to get, like, baseball is the only sport where you're going to do that. And that's what just makes it so awesome. And especially at the college level, when nowadays with NIL and the transfer portal and this professionalization of college athletics, where why would I go out there, risk getting hurt after throwing 100 pitches, and I can't play professionally or I can't play at my next transfer portal destination because my arm is torn up? No, go put it on the line and go win us a national championship. You don't see that anywhere else.
No, I mean it's you can even take the professional example and not to poo-poo on anybody, but the best pitcher probably in baseball right now, in Tarek Skubal. How he did not pitch in the world or in the World Baseball Classic just because he needed to stay on his regular rotation for the season coming up, and it was like, yeah, but I'm still going to go travel with the team. And I remember he caught a lot of flack because of that. Just again because it was like, yeah, it's just the World Baseball Classic. It doesn't truly mean anything.
I think a lot of that also has to do with what the Tigers want with
sure.
with what they were expecting this season.
It's just more so. It's like, okay, then don't accept the invitation.
Sure.
Give somebody that's going to go out and wear the flag of the United States across their chest out and compete.
I don't disagree with that, yeah. But I think that had let – because he even said it's like, I wish I could.
Right.
But management wants me to do this because they say that the season they're expecting, they're really saying when we trade you to a bigger market
team. When we trade you to Atlanta.
Ugh, please. I mean, that's something me and Caleb Robertson were talking about earlier today, and we were just like, if you could guarantee a World Series, do it. But looking at some of the prospects they have, like, I know that's been floated around. We'll have to talk about it. I'd love to get Lindsey Crosby's perspective on that soon, but that would be insane. But no, you're right. Like, it's hearing it on the professional side or the college side. You don't have a lot of those guys, and I'd really like to see someone step up tonight and be that. I don't know who it's going to be, but even like Danton LaChance fighting through injury with his ankle to play games against Georgia and has still been the best player in Omaha.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
I mean, two home runs, three RBIs in game one. We'll take our first break. We'll come back and we'll dive a little bit more into game one, game two, some of the superstars, and then, my goodness, some of the numbers when looking at this North Carolina team, as well as this OU team, as there is going to be history made regardless of the overall winner. I can't help, though, but before we go to break, thinking about, you mentioned the player, like Kobe and the Achilles, or Pennington with the broken leg.
Right.
Have you... I cannot repeat what is said.
Oh, is it?
But
is
the
it
video is
Greg,
it
Jenner? Greg Jennings. Yes, he put the team on his back, Christian. He put the team on his back.
On his back.
A yes.
Fantastic.
That is an all-timer. All-timer.
It made me laugh when you said that. But no, we will take our break, and we're definitely going to play it during the break, and we're going to come back laughing because the FCC will not let us play that over the air. But if you know, you know. If not, I highly recommend that you go and look at it. We'll take our first break here on the Monday edition of On the Line. If you want to be a part of the show, give us a call, 334-321-1390. We'll continue talking the World Series, the College World Series. I don't know where I was going with that. We'll talk the College World Series, Game 3, winner take all, North Carolina and OU. Some of the numbers between both of these teams when we come back.
From revolution to rockets, from dusty frontiers to city skylines, these are the moments that shaped America. This is the American Minute presented by Bucks Island. July 4th, 1776. Inside Philadelphia's Pennsylvania State House, 56 men prepared to sign a document unlike any the world had ever seen. A declaration that 13 small colonies would break away from the most powerful empire on earth. If they failed, it would be treason, punishable by death. John Hancock signed first, boldly. Then the others followed, farmers, merchants, lawyers. Ordinary men risking everything. Their words, radical for the time. That all men are created equal. Now, 2.5 centuries later, that idea still echoes. One defining moment that shaped the country we call home. This American Minute is presented by Bucks Island, family-owned and operated, serving boaters since 1948. Online at bucksisland.com.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
18 million views is what that video has of Greg Jennings putting the team on his back. Again, we just died laughing. The fact that this was 16 years ago, and we could still almost quote the entire thing of going into the mind of everything. Yes, a fantastic video. All started because we mentioned the arms being completely available for the College World Series. And
yeah.
You want to talk about true storytelling summers of lack of true sports. That'll do it exactly right there. And
yeah.
So, again, happy final college sporting events of the 2025-2026 season. That ends tonight between North Carolina and Oklahoma, Game 3 of the College World Series. Winner take all. Why would you want it any other way? And, again, we appreciate everybody for being here with us on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin here on ESPN 106.7. And you mentioned some of the big-time names in the first segment and want to be able to dive into those names, because it's obviously going to be the Johnny Holstaff of both of these teams just trying to get the outs. But it's also going to have to be the stars that need to take over. And going to break, you mentioned a guy like Deaton LeChance, who, again, hit two home runs, three RBIs in game one of the series. And the second one, I have no idea how he got a barrel to, because they threw fastball above the zone that he swung and missed at, fastball above the zone that he swung and missed at, and then they went fastball, guess what, above the zone and well above the zone. And somehow he was able to tomahawk it and still get a barrel to it and get it to where you still had a relatively normal launch angle at a pitch right around your neck. And so he was able to crank that out to left field for his second home run of the afternoon. In game one, it was 5 Sooners that had multi-hit games. Only one Sooner did not have a hit in game one. You mentioned Cord Raider as well. The big lefty went 5 innings. And again, North Carolina scored in the first inning. did not score the remainder of the contest. Rager settled down, gave him four scoreless after that first inning, who, funny enough, has struggled mightily going into the tournament. I believe in his last four outings before the postseason, had given up 18 runs and 18 earned runs. And so the fact that you can just flip that mental switch and all of a sudden it's that one good outing that gives you your confidence back, that's exactly what you saw in game one. Gavin Jones, the junior reliever, also went 2 1/3 scoreless after that, his longest outing since April 4th. And so in that game one, you had two guys go do more than what they were quote-unquote scheduled to do. Obviously, yeah. With Rager, you imagine if you can get five innings from your starter, you're definitely going to be okay with that. But you're almost on thin ice just based off of the sometimes lack of success that he showed towards the back half of the season. You then go to game two, and Oklahoma had just two hits after the first inning. And again, the wild stat that we were able to read is that the losing teams scored in the first inning and then did not score again after that. In game one, North Carolina scored 3, lost 9-3, and OU scored 2 in the first in game two and lost 6-2. And so basically just don't score in the first inning. I mean, it's really a simple game, right? I mean, just based off of analytics, just don't score in the first and score in innings 2 through 9, and you put yourself in a good spot.
Sure. Yeah, that's impressive.
Simple game, man.
Yeah, speaking of statistics and scoring, I looked up this statistic. I want to tell you that it's an Auburn-related statistic, but doesn't...
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So, Deaton LeChance, I've been saying Dayton, but Deaton, he has 16 home runs on the year. He had 4 home runs going into the Auburn series at the end of April. He's had 12s in the past 2 months.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. So people are saying, not me, but people are saying that Auburn caused Deaton LeChance to be good. I'm just pointing out a statistic. You take it from there. But, I mean, if that's what they're going to have to do. Oklahoma looking to win its first national championship in baseball since 94. UNC looking for the first one in program history despite being there 12 times. History is getting made tonight, whether it be in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, or Norman, Oklahoma, and it's going to be phenomenal.
Should be a whole lot of fun. The final.
Are you sticking with North Carolina?
Of course. You got to stick with your guns.
Boomer.
Scary enough. I do want to hit one more point before we change subjects, but music kicking us out of here. When we come back, we will complete this conversation. Also talk Dusty May leaving Michigan, making his way to the NBA. We'll talk about what that means for Michigan, what that means for college basketball, what that could mean for Auburn in the SEC, and some recent quotes from Dusty May talking about the state of college athletics playing a big time factor in this job change.
You're on the line, and we're just 30 minutes in. Now back to the studio with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7.
Oh, gosh. 30 minutes into the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. A reminder to stick with us throughout the show this afternoon. Coming up in hour number two, we're talking all things Auburn football. We have Auburn recruiting as they strike again. We also have a first-year head coach recruiting look that Trip did a lot of information, a lot of studying on, just in terms of what is it? It's the recruiting class after a first-year head
coach,
correct?
Yes, their first full recruiting class, because I wouldn't necessarily say that the 2026 recruiting class was Alex Golish's recruiting class. It was Freeze did a lot, and then Golish got some different guys, but it wasn't a full cycle.
Right.
Their first full cycle as a head coach with the program.
And so the fact of, we'll be able to compare what Golish has already done in comparison to some of the other coaches, while not even having coached a game yet, inside Jordan-Hare Stadium on the road or in Mercedes-Benz in Atlanta. We also have Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joining us to talk about the recruiting, kind of a general recap towards the 2025-2026 season for the Auburn Tigers, and then also some more questions on the entertainment news that we will get to here in just a few moments. But do want to put a bow on the College World Series because the music was kicking us out before we could, give our final final prediction. Are we changing at all? You're still OU. I'm still North Carolina.
Yes.
Okay.
I think that's what's going to make it great. It gives us both a rooting interest, and it's not just like we come in either happy or sad. One of us is happy, one of us is sad, I guess.
Look at that. Just great. Great radio,
great
regardless.
Radio.
We need to make – ooh, this is what – so total side note. For the 2026-2027 calendar year, we need to have – because last year Jacob and I did this for all of our college football picks.
Right.
Yours truly won, by the way.
Of course.
I think I went – oh, gosh, 99 and – like 61 in like our 10 games every single, like it was a pretty, both of us were pretty solid record. I think I only won by like 3 or 4 picks, but
interesting. Mine was, because I did mine on like a TikTok account. I went 91 and 52.
Okay. So again, still
good.
Still pretty solid.
Where was Mr. Goins?
Again, I think he was like 3 games behind me. I think he went like 96.
Okay, good.
Like we had a pretty,
I was worried he was gonna be like under 500.
No. We both had like really, really solid picks, but for the calendar year of 2026-2027, in terms of the fiscal year, we need to make every single one of our predictions. We have a full running tally of every single prediction.
Yeah, just the who's right list.
Yeah, who to look at in terms of where your Monopoly money would go if you were to use this show, which you shouldn't, in terms of anything that you cannot do in the state of Alabama, which you wouldn't do anyway, so you wouldn't even have to worry about it, so it doesn't even matter.
Yeah, agree. Yeah, we can name it. We can come up with some naming. I don't know, like the Sorsby list or something. I don't know.
Gosh.
But no, we could. Yeah, that'll be fun. But anyways,
if you would like to sponsor that, feel free to let us know.
I'd be very concerned. Yeah, the Sorsby thing that's illegal in the state of Alabama list.
No, it's not even that. Just our picks. That's
sure.
All
oh, picks. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. But college baseball.
Yes.
Get
but
back on track.
So you are going Oklahoma. You're still
going
in the SEC. Mm-hmm. I'm staying with North Carolina to win their first in program history. Again, been to Omaha 12 times. Is it that, or they've been in the College World Series 12 times? Regardless, they're going to win their. They're attempting to win their first.
Can I ask a question that probably shows that I'm a little ignorant? If they've been in the College World Series 12 times, wouldn't that just mean the same thing as going?
Well,
to
the
Omaha?
College World Series. Sorry, this is all considered the College World Series. I consider everything Omaha, and then the College World Series finals being the College World Series.
Okay, got you.
Technically, it's the College World Series and the College World Series Finals, but I just like having the College World Series as being the winning series.
Sure.
And I consider everything else to be Omaha just in general. But
okay,
looking to win their first national championship, and then OU looking to win their first since 1994 on the diamond. And we talked a lot about how, again, you never know who's going to run out of the bullpen. You threw 80 pitches last night? Cool. Give me 4 outs. And I think that's a little bit of what's expected when you look at Caden Glauber, again, for North Carolina. I think North Carolina has a little bit more on the pitching staff. But when you look at what the OU Sooners do through the lineup, that's what makes them so scary. Because, man, it's a 2-run game. All of a sudden, it's tied. Or all of a sudden, OU now has a 1-run lead just because of what their long ball has been able to look like over the last couple of months. I trust North Carolina's lineup 1 through 9 a little bit more, but that's why OU is so scary, just because of their instant offense that they can create. And so, again, Tripp going Oklahoma, Christian is going North Carolina. And so from one basketball program powerhouse to another, talking about OU, of course. No, just kidding. We have college news on the basketball side of things as Dusty May leaves Michigan to make his way to Dallas, Texas, in a journey that's in a job, really, that you didn't even really hear much about in terms of what Dusty May had looked at. This is the first time in 7 years that a men's college basketball head coach is leaving to take over an NBA team, and it's one that is very successful in Dusty May, quickly making his way up the ranks at the college level, but he will no longer be at the college level. He is taking the Dallas Mavericks head coaching job, and so that brings a big-time question mark to the state of college basketball as one of the premier powerhouses, Michigan, looking for a new head coach.
Right. You know, this is the first time in 7 years that a coach is leaving the collegiate ranks to join the NBA. Funny enough, Michigan was on the other end of it last time as well. The Cleveland Cavaliers hiring John Beilein in, I believe, 2019.
Yeah.
Yeah, as their head coach. So a lot of NBA, if you're just the head coach at Michigan, not named Juwan Howard, you know, you're going you're gonna have an NBA opportunity fall into your lap is what it sounds like of recent history. But, yeah, I think this is so interesting because you look at some of the jobs that came open in this past cycle, specifically North Carolina,
yeah,
was a job, and everyone was like, this is Dusty's job if he wants it. Or if another, like a Florida becomes open, if Todd Golden was to go up to Chapel Hill, then Dusty would come back to Florida. But it wasn't that one of those premier 1A jobs that got him away from Ann Arbor. It was Dallas Mavericks, which is so interesting to me. I think, like, I'll have to – what's your opinion on this? Would you rather have the North Carolina basketball job or be the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks? Because I think he could have had either or.
Yeah, I do. And it even follows up with Golden possibly taking the Warriors job if Steve Kerr didn't get the extension, which he got like a one-year deal to basically try and live out the tenure. But it's a very interesting question, and – funny enough, it's one that you ask 5 or 10 years ago, and I think for us in the South and us in the college sports world, I don't think there's any question of, yeah, let me coach college basketball, let me coach college football, or whatever the case may be. But you're almost at a point now, and funny enough, we have some statements on this, according to CBS and their college basketball pages, on the big reason that Dusty May decided to leave Michigan is because of the state of college athletics, because of the NIL, because of the transfer portal, because of all of the crazy things that just go on that coaches didn't used to have to worry about. You look at what happened a decade ago, and at least we'll say what happened publicly a decade ago. It was, okay, let me recruit my high school class, and then once they commit and once they sign, I'm good to go. I don't have to think about recruiting them again. I don't have to think about money negotiations. I don't have to think about anything in that terms. And now, as a college head coach, you're having to be the general manager. You're having to be the accountant. You're having to be just about everything. And obviously, you have other people that are in that boat with you as well. But it's your name that's attached to everything for the world of college athletics, making it to where, okay, let me go take a professional job. And now you have people that already do that. And you're telling me, I can work on X's and O's. I can just give opinions on who I think we should draft. Huh. Makes my job a whole lot easier.
Right. You look at the NFL is a great example of this, looking at coaches that will jump up from the collegiate ranks recently with, like, Jeff Hafley at Boston College, a coach that was not a good coach at Boston College. It's speaking from someone that has ACC experience. Boston College was always that team that just couldn't break through. The consummate, maybe, you know, 5-7 to 6-6 in terms of what their ceiling was, got an NFL defensive coordinator job inside. It's like, I don't want to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
You look
it's
at
exhausting.
You look at Nick Saban, basically probably took off 5 years of Nick Saban's career, which he could have been competing for national championships right now, especially in an expanded playoff, because there are a few coaches I'd want to have to coach against in a winner take all game. Then Nick Saban, he said, no, I don't want to deal with it. I'm trying to think of some other ones, but there are 100% more that are just slipping off the top of my head right now that were at the collegiate ranks and said, no, I can't do this anymore, at least from the college football perspective. And now it's spreading over to college basketball with the transfer portal and the international and the 5-5, the Charles Bediako and the Luis Robert stuff at LSU right now. It's the same thing. What?
R.J. Lewis?
R.J. Lewis, yeah.
Luis, okay. My baseball, brain click. Luis Robert was the left fielder for the White Sox and is now on the Mets.
You're right.
So I was like, wait, he went to LSU, but the R.J. Lewis.
I heard Luis. Yes, he was in New York. So you see the going from St. John's. You see the lines there.
Sure.
It just It got
out the, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The entire bulletin board with exactly all of the arrows trying to make that connection.
That's exactly what just happened. It's
very, very accurate. And we got a text in the on the line text box, which you can always be a part of again at 334-784-1685, 334-784-1OTL. And it says this is the exact reason why we're surprised that guys like Kirby Smart, guys like Dabo Swinney, guys like Lincoln Riley are still coaching the college level, just because it feels so exhausting to have to worry about and the every single day of your team, and not only your team, but the guys that you hope to come in. And then you're having to worry about other coaches and what they do with the guys on your team. And then you're having to recruit your class while also making sure that you recruit the guys that are already wearing your colors. I mean, it's going to be a more and more popular job in terms of working from the semi-professional level at the college level up to the professional level, because there are contracts. There are black and white formalities just in terms of, man, there's no gray area. There's no, is this legal? Do you think we could get away with this? Do you think there are any geniuses that could find a way to bring a loophole into this system? You don't see that. The only thing that you see is people trying to opt out of their contracts. And if you agree, guess what? You don't pay any more of that money. That's crazy to think of, rather than in college where you have these guaranteed contracts that we think are worth this much or we think are worth that much, but then the player has more individual than the entire program does. Yes, you see some of the franchise tags, and rightfully so, at some of these professional levels. Yet, that being said, the individual does not have more say than the overall franchise does, at least at places that are successful. And crazy to think that after a national championship run, and probably the favorite, if not for Florida, to win it again and go back to back, he says, you know what? I'm good. Let me go to a team in the NBA that finished, what, bottom third of the league last year, just so that way I can get out of college athletics. If this is not a wake-up call to the NCAA, I don't know what is.
100%. I mean, I think that there is a little bit of where I think that given the way that college athletics used to be, again, if you like without NIL, granted, there always was going to be some kind of back room. I mean, you know, Eric Dickerson didn't get a gold Trans Am just because he was like he got that because of he was being recruited illegally, just to call a spade a spade. There's not going to be Jeremy Pruitt McDonald's bags full of cash as much. But I think that also gave a wall of separation from the head coaches, because you had to say, like, have deniability. They don't have that deniability anymore with NIL. They have to know every single dollar that's in their fund and where it's going. And it's going to be that's what's made it a lot more stressful. And so that's led him to go to Dallas, where he's going to have the number 9 pick tomorrow in the NBA draft, which will be right here on ESPN 106.7,
nice.
Both first and second round.
Company man, well done.
Mm-hmm. I had to make the live event minute, I know. But they got the number 9 pick. I mean, I saw jokes like he's going to draft Alex Mara from one of his former players, and it's going to just be stuff. It's stuff like that that you're going to see, and it's going to make it even more stressful with all of these potential Michigan players that can enter the transfer portal 5 days after they get a new head coach.
And that will be, again, the big, big conversation. And we'll go ahead and take a break just so that way we can dive a little bit more into that, because it is. It's that snowball effect. Assuming that Michigan decides to hire outside the program, what does that do for just the state of college basketball? What does that do for the players, not only at Michigan, but again, the snowball of whoever they decide to hire, and then whoever they decide to hire. We'll dive into that, what that could look like for the SEC, what that could possibly look like in a little bit of a dream scenario for the Auburn Tigers as well. We'll take our break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one with that conversation next.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us. Been a fantastic, really, really fun show through 1 hour here this afternoon. And continuing our conversation in terms of Dusty May leaving Michigan, and not so much now. Again, we had a big-time rant. I wasn't expecting a full-time rant about the NCAA, but it came out of me this afternoon, and it was nice to feel.
Hey, you just got to say your piece about it, because then, you know what? You say it now, because in 5 years when it doesn't exist, You said your piece.
I did say my piece. But looking now again at that snowball effect, at the rollover, the carryover, just based off of the information that we know now is that Michigan is going to hire one of their assistants to be the interim head coach. But it obviously brings up the big question of how many players does Michigan get to stay? You look at what they did in the transfer portal. Bringing out Mustafa Thiem from Cincinnati. They got J.P. Estrella from Tennessee. They also got Jalen Reed, who's a hell of a talent from LSU. And then you look at the guys, I mean, like Elliott Cadeau, that lead the guys that are going to at least set their return to the Michigan Wolverines. But now, based off the head coaching change, after 5 days, that now becomes basically free roam for anybody. And so a wild concept on that side of things about who does Michigan decide to go after, or do they try to keep everything in-house and try and, I don't want to say suffer for a year because it's Michigan and they're not going to suffer in this world of NIL and in this world of how everything works. But do you go after that big-time name or do you not? Because not only then would that open up your roster, if Auburn or if Michigan does go and hire a big-time name. I know that Nate Oates is in that conversation. Oh. If Nate Oates were to take that Michigan job and go kind of back closer to home in a job that cares a lot more about basketball than Alabama does, just saying it the way that it is, and that's not a shot at Nate Oates whatsoever, because as much as I don't necessarily care for him as an individual, he's a fantastic basketball coach.
I hate to admit it, but yeah, he is.
A fantastic coach. And it sucks to say it like that, but it's like, then all of a sudden, then the carryover is, after that, Alabama's roster then becomes free agency. And then they have to hire somebody, and that roster becomes free agency. And so, wild to think that the transfer portal has been closed for 2 months, yet you feel like it could very easily be opened yet again. And Auburn fans can dream of the scenario that, hey, remember those two buddies that grew up playing basketball together that are best friends? You know, the ones that wanted to play together a year ago, but, you know, Tahad had to make the decision of the draft versus staying at home. And so there's a little guy who went from North Carolina to Michigan and then led their team to a national championship. Yeah, Elliott Cadeau, you're an Auburn Tiger.
That would be fantastic, and it'd be very interesting. Now, I know with the new rule, I was listening to the Max Roundtable earlier this morning on ESPN 106.7, and they were having a conversation of, why would you name a permanent head coach? Because the rule is, currently, you have 5 days after a head coach is named. I believe what they'll do is they're going to run the season with the interim, which I don't think they should do from a long-term standpoint necessarily because of the it's June. You can find a guy to be full-time. But I will say, if you are worried about roster construction, if you think that the interim is a good enough coach to get you to the tournament and maybe you make some noise there with your talent, give him a season-long audition, and then you hire somebody the first day after your season ends.
Unless there needs to be a day that a permanent head coach is named, and what that case becomes, gosh, if you're trying to delay that, there will definitely be some sort of lawsuit that comes out from a player just because that's what you do nowadays of, okay, well, I went to go play for him, and so the fact that he is not the head coach, I don't want to be here anymore. Yet because of how Michigan handled the situation, that makes it to where I didn't have time to go pick another school. All of that drama.
Kind of what people were speculating with the Bruce Stephen Pearl that actually didn't end up happening with the roster leaving.
Yeah, exactly. And so more and more drama that will continue to unfold within the coming weeks. And how nice, we have more sports talk over the next couple of weeks to discuss what that looks like for Michigan, what that looks like for the SEC, college basketball, maybe even Auburn as a whole in there as well. Hour number one in the books. When we come back, hour number two underway. We have Jacob Hillman at 3:30, and we're talking all things Auburn football recruiting.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text in at 334-784-1067. The boys are bringing you all the action on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. When it comes to the Tigers, the SEC, and the hottest topics in sports, this is where you want to be.
Auburn football recruiting strikes again. A first-year head coaching recruiting look. And Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here in hour number two.
Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, straight from the ESPN 106.7 studio, here's Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton.
Hour number one in the books. We welcome you into hour number two here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us on this, wow, sunny afternoon. Happy, oh gosh, was it the second day of summer? I believe yesterday was officially the first day of summer. So happy second day of summer. It has definitely felt like that over the past 2 days, but you will take that over the rain without any question whatsoever. And so happy Monday, everybody. Hopefully everybody is doing well, and we appreciate you for spending a little bit of time here with us on ESPN 106.7. A really fun hour number one that kind of was national throughout the college landscape. We talked the College World Series. We talked about Game 1 and Game 2, some of the big-time names that you need to know, some of the big-time names that have already produced, and some of the crazy stats in the College World Series that the losing team in both of the first two games scored in the first and did not score the remainder of the game. And so, simple game. Just don't score in the first and score every inning after that. I mean, it really is that easy. You should make me a hitting coach. I'd make things really, really simple for the team. We talked about that. Also, the stats that history will be made in Omaha tonight. North Carolina looking to win its first baseball national championship in program history. Oklahoma looking to do the same thing since 1994 for the first time, since the last time they won a national championship. North Carolina, decent-sized favorites in that one. Tripp has Oklahoma to pull off the upset. I have North Carolina. We're both sticking with our guns from this past weekend. And then we talked Dusty May leaving Michigan. We talked about the impact that that has in college athletics, not only in the actual sports world, but just the NCAA and the wake-up call that you hope that that is for the NCAA, because statements have been released that's arguably the biggest, if not a very, very big reason that Dusty May decided to leave Michigan was because of the current state of college athletics. And if that's not a wake-up call, I don't know what is for what is left of the NCAA as you delay the inevitable maybe for a couple more years. But talked about that, talked about Michigan's current roster, some of the transfer portal additions as well, and what the snowball effect could look like throughout college basketball, assuming they hire outside their program with the carryover of 5 days after a new head coach is named. That is when, quote-unquote, your roster basically enters the transfer portal if they want to, and it becomes a full-on free-for-all, and how that could be passed down from Michigan to whichever school loses its head coach to whichever school then loses its head coach. And so the transfer portal for basketball closed 2.5 months ago. But welcome back, assuming Michigan hires outside right now. The assistant was named the interim head coach. All of that was in our number one. If you missed any of it, you can always go back and check it out at our podcast center over at ESPNAU.com.
And in our number two, we talk all things Auburn. We have Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. He will join us at 3:30. We'll talk some football. We'll talk about the latest news, what's going to be happening in Neville Arena this fall, as well as some U.S. Open talk, hopefully, from a big golfer guy, Jacob Hillman. We're going to take a look at the recruiting and what it means for a first-year head coach. I've got some really good statistics that you're going to want to hear, and how Alex Goldlich is on pace with some other head coaches in the Southeast historically, as well as some recruiting news, some flips both one way and the other, and some big commits for the Tigers as the recruiting class continues to heat up. But I think we have to start this hour with the biggest news in Auburn today. Miss Ella Langley.
Oh, we're starting with, oh man, let's do it.
How about it?
I'm
sure our good buddy Jacob Goins this might get him to stay. Having her come into town, Ella Langley, on August 28th and 29th, we will both have some high school football on that first night. But the second night, playing in Neville Arena as well with Gabrielle Rose and Ernest. Christian, this is someone that you just went and saw at Braves Fest. Just kind of give the people a preview of what this could look like.
Greatness is what it could look like. Really excited for what that's going to look like, and again, just what that could mean more so in the future. Auburn is becoming very much an entertainment hotspot, if you will, just based off of Parker McCollum, Riley Green, Savannah Bananas, Road to 26, and again now Ella Langley. I mean, Auburn is opening up their doors, and it took a long time just based off of agreements, and I know that they signed that deal about a year and a half ago, just about what that could look like for Auburn in the future of having live events at Jordan-Hare Stadium inside Neville Arena. I am a bit surprised that this is not inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. Maybe it's just because, I mean, again, not a financial issue, but just a crunch of how this is relatively soon, I guess, for part two of her Dandelion tour. But nonetheless, very, very excited. Again, yeah, we did get to go see her at Truist Park a couple of days ago. A big thank you to those that were in part of that with the on-the-line breakers. Very, very much enjoyed it. It was Mackenzie Carpenter, and then it was Ernest, who I would say I was the most impressed with just based off of overall performance. I mean, he's fantastic, and I'm a big fan of the music that he puts out, even more so of the music that he writes. You'd be so surprised when I don't know if you're a college or a country music junkie like I am, but just how you hear all of these songs, and unless it's Luke Bryan, how lyrically good they are, and how they're majority written by what feels like four or five people, and they just spread it out throughout the college or the country world. And so excited for that, and he put on a fantastic performance, as did Ella Langley and Cody Johnson, but obviously Cody not a part of this. But really cool to see her bring out like part two of that Dandelion tour, going to a bunch of different college towns. But the fact that Auburn gets her twice is really, really cool.
Right. I mean, this is a hometown for Ella Langley,
yeah,
who is known to be a big Auburn fan. I'm excited to see what that'll look like. But you said it with the entertainment capital, or at least a lot of entertainment coming to Auburn. It's in the NIL era, you have to stay competitive and find ways to find revenue, and that's what they're doing with this this concert, and some of that revenue probably helping out with this recruiting right now, Christian.
Yeah, I mean, my goodness, when you look at just going back to Sanford Stadium with what Luke Bryan and what Jason Aldean did with their country concert again inside Sanford Stadium with Georgia, I know that they had like NIL partnerships with that, and how that went part of that went directly to football, and so interesting to see on what that could look like for Auburn with Ella Langley, and then again for the future. But how perfectly timed that we get to talk Auburn football recruiting, and there is some negative news that released probably what 8 that comes as too much of a surprise. I'll dive into here in just a few moments. I don't think that it comes as too much of a surprise to the Auburn Tigers, and we'll tell you why here in just a moment. But again, if you want to be a part of today's program, feel free to do so. The phone lines are open for the next 20 minutes or so, 334-321-1390. Again, if you have any thoughts on anything we talked about in hour number one, anything going on in the sports world, or anything on the Auburn recruiting front, feel free to give us a call. Again, 334-321-1390. The on-the-line text box is also open as well. As always, is open. It's been very active here this afternoon with a couple of questions that we've been able to ask, and also answering some questions during some of the breaks as well. That's 334-784-1685. Again, 334-784-1OTL. And yes, Auburn recruiting strikes again, and I feel like that is more so the way that we want to bring in this segment before we dive into, again, the one most recent news that does not go in Auburn's favor, but that's because of some of the good news that Auburn found out here over the weekend. As James Pace III commits, as well as three others commit to the Auburn Tigers. 22, I guess now officially 21, sure, as we were setting up for this here this afternoon. 21 commits for Alex Golish and the Auburn Tigers. 8 of them are 4-stars before the senior season even gets going. A whole lot of excitement continuing to build with Alex Golish on the Plains.
Right. You know, looking at some rankings, just some numbers for you. James Pace comes in right now as a top recruit in Auburn's class, the 6th-ranked recruit in Auburn's class out of DeMartha Catholic in Hyattsville, Maryland.
And that is who we gave our preview for on Friday of hoping it would come true. And we said, all right, hopefully we're able to talk about it on Monday.
Right.
Because that is also
Kinnear Crum.
Kinnear Crum's teammates. Again, yeah, coming from that Maryland pipeline. And so another big-time talent there.
Yes. So that's great. Again, he says it felt like home. That was the big start to the weekend. He is the number 18th ranked edge in the country, number 4 ranked player in the state, a top 200 player nationally. That's a big add to this defensive line that continues to just improve across the board.
Yeah, they did. And then after that, Auburn was able to flip the West Virginia running back, Kamani Williams. And I think this was not that this commit is surprising whatsoever, but you figured with the news that was continuing to work towards Kingston Miles and Missouri, which, again, we have just found out was official, him making the flip from the Tigers to the Tigers, but going from Auburn to Columbia, you felt as Auburn was going to attack another running back, and they were able to do so, and did so very silently, according to our buddy Christian Clemente of 24/7 Sports and Auburn Undercover, talking about bringing him in for the secret official visit right before the dead period, which began yesterday, I believe. But he committed to West Virginia on June 12th, 5'10" or 5'11", 205 pounds. He's the 36th running back in the class and the 24th ranked player from the state of Tennessee. He's tabbed as an 89th overall player, if that means anything to you, on the cusp of 4-star status, which you would imagine would go up after or during his senior year. And so excited for what that could mean. Again, a very silent commit that you were able to get and work your way to actually officially get the words commitment. And I think that was the counteract for Kingston Miles, again, flipping from Auburn to Missouri.
Right. Good for Alex Golish and this staff to be don't be reactive, be proactive.
Yeah.
With not only does that kind of force, you know, you hate to say like forces someone's hand, but it forces Missouri and Kings to be like, all right, you can either stay and you got to compete with this guy, or you can go and go be a Missouri Tiger, where he immediately is one of their better recruits for a class that is just outside of the top 25.
I mean, it's clearly the way that Golish is thinking about it, and the way that he talks, it would tell you nothing otherwise of, if you want to be here, we want you here. If not, we'll find somebody else that wants to be here and we'll make it work.
Right. And I mean, you know, and you have to remember that you already are already competing with Mice and Johnson Cook,
which is priority number 1A, 1B, 1C, and 1D.
Right. Especially for just outside of the top 50 nationally, the 4th best running back, the 3rd best player in the state of Illinois.
He will be a 5-star unanimously once his senior year is done.
Yes, that'll be really interesting to see. And another big commit that I wanted to talk about was Preston Williams, guy that loved Auburn. He is ranked as a 3-star recruit on 247, a top 100 player in the state, or top 65 player in the state. And the athlete, a guy that Charles Kelly over at Jacksonville State wanted bad. Apparently people thought that it was between Auburn and the Gamecocks. And for a guy like Charles Kelly, who knows how to recruit and knows how to evaluate talent, you might see a 3-star be concerned. But if Charles Kelly's going after him, there's a good chance he's a decent player. And that's what Auburn is going to try and get with Preston Williams, a guy that has Auburn history all throughout his life.
Yeah, and this is one of those feel-good recruits, and by no means is that a shot towards the talent whatsoever, but more so just regarding the fact that you don't see the legacy commits anymore. You don't see this is where I want to go. It doesn't matter who's there, what's there, whatever. I want to be I want to be a Tiger. I want to be a Gamecock. I want to be a Wolverine, whatever the case may be. The fact that Preston Williams has dreamed of being an Auburn Tiger and Alex Golish and this staff gave him the opportunity to pursue and to complete a lifelong dream, that is so cool for somebody like me, and for anybody to really dream of and for them to think of. He got the official offer at the summer camp and announced his decision on Sunday, and credited his faith, gave so much credit to his faith, and gave Philippians 4:13 in his commitment post, and talked about, man, saying, quote, "Today that faith and hard work has led me to make a dream come true. I am blessed and honored to announce my commitment to Auburn University. Thank you to everyone who has supported me on this journey, especially my parents for always believing in me. Truly, I've always wanted to be, or sorry, apologies. Truly, I've always been an Auburn man. I love Auburn, and I believe in it. War Eagle."
Yes, the in-state athlete from G.W. Long High School in Skippersville, Alabama. For people that may not know where that is, it's north of Enterprise in Dothan, close to, I forget what city I said it was close to when we were prepping the show, but
kind of Enterprise, the Dothan-ish area.
The Wiregrass region of Alabama, near at Ozark. That was the city I was referencing. But yeah, good for him. I'm so happy that someone that wants the best for Auburn no matter what. Yeah. It's not a guy that's just, hey, what can you pay me? Or, hey, how can you play me? It's, I want to be able to wear that Navy jersey. I want to be able to watch the Eagle flight and run out onto Jordan-Hare Field and compete for the Tigers. That's such a big – and another in-state recruit that I just love to see for the Tigers. And in the words of Devon Reed, they weren't done this weekend.
No, they weren't. Again, Williams, 6'2", 190 pounds. He was the 21st commit for the 27 class. And again, if you have not seen the pictures of him, I highly recommend you go and do so, because, I mean, this is him at 5'6", not that, I mean, but wearing an Auburn jersey, wearing an Auburn helmet, wearing, holding an Auburn football, and videos and pictures like this are so cool to see of kids getting their lifelong dream fulfilled. And so a lot of credit goes to him. And again, I mean, 6'2", 190 pounds, I think you can work with stuff like that. That's that will definitely play in the SEC, especially with again that heart to want to for Auburn to succeed, and the desire. Really cool for Preston Williams. But yes, you mentioned it. They were not finished as the linebacker, and it's a little bit confusing. You had to read it a couple of times, but the linebacker edge, Vaughn Brandt, the big brother of the offensive lineman. He is also committed to the Auburn Tigers, adding yet another piece to the offensive line.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Linebacker.
Gosh. Yeah. Sorry. Brother of the offensive line. See, I told you had to read it two or three times.
Right.
Well, you already got that piece from the offensive line. You now gain another piece in the linebacker.
No, that's going to be such a big addition for this squad. And it continues the family mindset for this team. The 6 foot linebacker, again, from the Appoquinimink High School. I think I got it right this time.
Nice. Good work.
Middletown, the Middletown, Delaware. He's actually in the class of 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So he will be walking on this year,
yeah,
effectively. And that's great. It helps secure that commit. Only according to 247 had an offer from the Maine Black Bears. I'm trying to see if there's any other information about him on some other websites, but that is such a really good opportunity that you're bringing in a guy that can play right away and continues to secure up that commitment from arguably one of the most impactful players on Auburn's 2025 or 2027 recruiting class in Leighton Vaughn Brandt.
21 commits now for the Auburn Tigers, 8 of them being 4-stars before the senior season even gets going. Auburn was up to 9th. I don't know if they have updated anything in terms of dropping after losing Kingston Miles.
At least
I would imagine a little bit.
Rivals, they remain at that number 12 spot. I will look up the team rankings, as we probably need to get to break soon.
Yeah, we are. We're going to take our break. But regardless, the fact of
still 9.
You're still 9th? Mm-hmm. Is that even with the loss of Miles?
Yes, because
okay. Well, there you go.
Boom.
Auburn, a top 10 class right now in college football in terms of the 2027 recruiting class. A whole lot of excitement with Alex Golish before he even coaches a game in the orange and blue. We'll take our first break in hour number two. Come back, look at a recruiting look for first-year head coaches, some at Auburn, some elsewhere, in terms of what they were able to do after they had coached a year in comparison to what Alex Golish has done before even coaching a game, and how a positive record, a winning record, and even just meeting the expectations for the Auburn Tigers sets a foundation that the Auburn family should love. We're back right after this here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You're on the line with Kristen Griffin and Trip Upton. If you want to be a part of the show, call 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-784-1067.
We continue on here on the Monday edition of On the Line. Appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending a little bit of time here on this Monday afternoon on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and of course that Radio Alabama app. I'm Christian Griffin. He is Trip Upton with you in the studio, and continuing our conversation, but turning our focus just a little bit from Auburn recruiting striking again to a little bit of an outlook over the last couple of years for Auburn, as well as some of the most successful coaches in college football, what they were able to do in year one after already having a year of coaching college football in comparison to what Alex Golish has already done. Trip, I know you had a whole lot of work to get some of these numbers, and so I do not want to take your thunder. I will let you rock and roll with this segment as you're continuing to find more and more knowledge and more and more information.
Yeah, so I think that such an interesting thing to look at as to judge a head coach is how they do in their first full recruiting cycle, because I think everyone can agree that while Alex Golish had a big thing to do with the 2026 recruiting class, he did not have a full year, a full season of expectations to show and a blueprint to show for his program. So that would mean the 2027 class will be the first class that Alex Golish gets to buy time in, can bring to games, can recruit with through a full recruiting cycle. And again, we talked about it earlier, Auburn number 9 right now on 247, number 12 and on 3 before having played a game. So I decided to take a look and see kind of how some other coaches have done and fared for this statistic at their first full class as well. So we start with Hugh Freeze, the man that came and was saying, I'm going to recruit, we're going to bring the best players in the South to Auburn. He went 6-7 in year one, top 10 class, number 10 in 2024, that had a lot of good players that were able to remain with Auburn. Brian Harsin, 2022, this was after, exactly. He also went 6-7 in the year prior, his first year. He ended in the top 25, which is the outlier in all of these numbers.
Yet that was still the highest that he ever found himself in.
Yeah. Remember Holton Greenier?
Oh, I remember.
Hard too. Gus Malzahn, coming off of an SEC championship, went 12-2 and was the Natty runner-up. Number 6 class in 2014, that was a very impactful class that continued to propel them in the future. Gene Chizik, even, coming off a national championship, had a top 5 recruiting class in 2011. That's just impactful. And so you've seen a lot of these guys, really Harsin being the lone outlier of top 10, top, or 10, 6, 5, looking elsewhere at two coaches that have dominated the sport in recent years. Nick Saban, in that 2008 class that he brought together and really was the start of the dynasty, went 7-6, brought in the number 3 class in the country. Kirby Smart went 8-5 in year one, won the Liberty Bowl against TCU in 2016-2017. In that 2017 class, he ended with the number 3 class. That's a team that did not turn down the music. That was a team that ended up competing for the national championship only a few years later. So what does that all mean? What do you take away from this? Alex Golish on pace right now before even playing a game. And if you can get to 8-4, maybe you could be a lot closer to Malzahn, Chizik, Saban, and Smart than Freeze and Harsin.
So what you're saying,
there's a chance,
is if Auburn wins football games, it's almost as if Auburn's a halfway easy, I want with quotation marks, place to recruit to. It's like you get guys on campus and they don't leave and they love Auburn. You put the product on the field and get that in the win column. My goodness, does it make things a whole lot easier. We'll see what Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network thinks as he joins us when we come back. We'll talk recruiting. We'll talk the year 2025, 2026 in athletics and entertainment as well with Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network.
Halfway through hour number two, you're on the line with Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Thirty more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Trip Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us and spending a little time here talking some sports, talking Auburn athletics, talking around the country here on this Monday afternoon. And we bring it back home, all the way home to Auburn, Alabama, with our good buddy Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network as he joins us every single Monday at 3:30. Hope all is well. Hopefully enjoying a little bit of the summer sun as we are now 2 days into the official summer here, Mr. Hillman.
Well, it feels like it's the first time we've seen the sun in about 2 weeks here in Auburn, and it's good to see it. And you know, it's one of those things where we're getting to that point of the year where it's talking season. We're starting to look ahead to the fall season and everything that goes into it. So, just so excited to be getting ready for that.
Yeah, well, happy final day of the 2025-2026 college athletics, I guess the fiscal year with Game 3 of the College World Series. But while it wasn't a collegiate sports, Jackson Koivin, his final tournament, having the A next to his name, competing in the U.S. Open up at Shinnecock in New York and Southampton, and my goodness, winning the low amateur, or I guess tying with the low amateur record. Talk to us about what you saw over the weekend, and then just, I guess, in general, how the course played in your opinion.
Yeah, just it was a fitting and perfect way for Jackson's amateur career to end with that co-low amateur honor alongside Ryder Cowan. And I mean, he becomes the first amateur ever to shoot sub 70 in the final round at Shinnecock in the U.S. Open. So that's a really cool kind of stat to have by his name. And I mean, it just continues to show how capable he is and that he's ready for the professional ranks and to compete with the best in the world. He will start to do that in the John Deere Classic here in a couple of weeks at TBC Deer Run. That tournament's held July 2nd through 5th. So it'll be fun to watch him kind of just maneuver that first year, I think, as a professional, because he's not going to be qualified for things like the playoffs unless he's able to go out and get a win. And there was an interesting comparison that I saw where John Rahm, back in his first U.S. Open, his final start as an amateur, he finished tied for 23rd, and he was a low amateur of that tournament, and then he went to the John Deere Classic, and he nearly won the tournament. So hopefully a similar kind of route for Jackson, and he can get his professional career off to a great start. But, I mean, I thought it was listen, say what you want about Wyndham Clark and everything that's happened in the past, but the way he kind of just trekked through that tournament, and he caught, I think he caught the fortunate end of the wave, between afternoon and morning on Thursday and Friday, mm-hmm. took advantage of it. And that's all he can do. And that's what he did. And it was exciting to see some drama down the stretch yesterday. I didn't think we would get that. I thought Clark would just kind of run away with it, but Sam Burns made a decent run. I thought Scotty Scheffler would have a better showing yesterday, but is what it is. I mean, listen, when the winning score is what it is and there's only a few guys that are under par, the USGA did a good enough job. I don't know if I cared for the setup Thursday and Friday with how much they were watering the greens, but I thought it all panned out perfectly for the weekend.
And how cool of a moment it was as you watched Koivin walk up 18, just hearing them talk all about the statistics and the honors that he had at Auburn University. I know that Auburn got shouted out multiple times for their national championship, and a cool Father's Day moment with the counterpart that he was also paired up with. But how cool it was for again, just Auburn to be recognized on the national global golf scale, and when you're able to put Jackson Koivin into comparisons of John Rahm and Ludwig Oberg, I mean, I would say that they're having an okay career. And so I think the excitement for Jackson Koivin is definitely there, not only as an amateur, but again, a legitimate name in the PGA Tour.
Well, I go back to Saturday morning when obviously this weekend, Jackson was paired with Miles Russell, the 17-year-old number one ranked junior in the world. So that was a really cool weekend pairing for them to have both days. And it was interesting because they were one of the feature groupings on Saturday, and the on course reporter was Gary Christian, who actually played at Auburn back in the mid to late 90s. And that's kind of a really cool connection and everything for him to be able to follow along and for, like you said, for so much Auburn discussion. I mean, there was a lot about not just Jackson, but also just the program itself and what Nick Kleinert has built up. And that's going to continue throughout the years. Logan Riley, he didn't make the cut this weekend, but he was participating in the U.S. Open. Mm-hmm. He played Thursday and Friday. That's valuable experience. And he's going to have, alongside Jake Albert, Josiah Gilbert, Caden Pope, Billy Davis, and all the other guys on that national championship winning team, they're going to have this summer to try and qualify for whether it's the U.S. amateur, whatever it is, and try and make waves themselves, kind of like Jackson Koivin has done over the last 3 years.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. And going from one Tiger who's wrapping up his collegiate and amateur career on the golf course, it's a big weekend for other ones trying to become Auburn Tigers next season in Jordan-Hare Stadium. Another fire recruiting weekend for Alex Golish and the Auburn Tigers. What do you like from this the freshest crop of commitments for Auburn?
Yeah, it just continues the momentum that's been rolling. It's proving that Auburn can recruit with the best in the nation and with the elite in the SEC, which is obviously going to be the best in the SEC. I mean, just look at the recruiting rankings right now as they stand. Of course, it's going to change quite a bit between now and the early signing period in December, but it is still, I think, and here's the way I look at it. I think it's good to be proactive and on the front end of this because obviously this hasn't been a class that Coach Golish and his staff have been able to recruit since, you know, they were able to Auburn. This started back in December, and that was after they had to really work a portal class to be ready for this season and everything. So to kind of do this on short notice and as quick as they've done it, it is what I'm so impressed by. And getting different kinds of, you know, guys in the trenches, running backs, DBs, whatever it is, and other athletes, like that's where I think where my biggest impression comes from is that, hey, look, we're not just focusing on one position group. We're doing it all over, but the primary focus is on the trenches because that's how you're going to win SEC and national titles is building there. And I'm excited to see it continue. Obviously, when you've got as many commits as you've got at this point, like Auburn does, that I don't know how much more work there is to do, but you know that things can change and things like that with your current commit. So yeah, you do have to keep working all the way until that early signing day, until you got pen to paper. But it'll be exciting to see kind of that trend continue, especially when the season gets started and some of those guys get into Jordan-Hare Stadium.
And leading up perfectly to my following question, because we've spent a lot of time talking about the Florida game inside Jordan-Hare Stadium, the one confirmed night game, but obviously so much excitement throughout the season. And it may be a little bit of the impossible question to answer and the impossible answer to even really be able to give, but what does winning do for Alex Golish in year one? I mean, the easy answer, the obvious answer is always, oh yeah, well, it helps the recruiting class. It builds the foundation. But is there a different side of the take that you have of what winning can do for a recruiting class before you even work your way again of having a full year for the 2027 class?
I think it's just the fact that we haven't been able to see what that can do for this program in quite some time.
It's a really good point,
quite frankly,
yeah.
Because Auburn hasn't had a winning season in over 5 years. So for that maybe to transition and see that uptick and just the wind, I think will have a major factor. And maybe it's not necessarily the recruiting, because, hey, look, let's be real. The recruiting has been solid over the last couple of years, especially from the high school ranks. Auburn has dominated the state of Alabama in that aspect, has gotten some elite skill position players in as well. It just hasn't translated to the field. And I think when that happens, the national conversation and things like that are maybe what changes. And that can, it's not going to make the difference in the world, but look, that's something that is a factor, I'm sure, with those high school kids when they take notice. Like, it's not just, well, this Auburn team, this Auburn program that hasn't had a winning season since 2020. No, it's Auburn program that's absolutely on the come up, and there's no doubt about it, because we've seen the results on the field this season, or I've seen it last week, or I saw it when I was at Jordan Hare. Mm-hmm. Those kinds of things, I think, are what make a difference. And other than what you just said, like, obviously, when guys see a winning team and a winning program, that makes a world of a difference. But I think on the outside looking in is where the biggest difference will come from.
And how much easier is it, too, again, as we have Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us on the phone lines every single Monday at 3:30, how much easier does it make the life of a coach, having to no longer use the words, you can be the one to set the foundation, you can be the one to bring us back, right? You feel like that's been the way that Auburn's had to recruit over the last handful of years of, man, you have now that solid foundation, and if you can get a winning record of even just meeting the expectations, much less what the possibilities could look like for Auburn and Alex Golish in year one, how much easier that has to make recruiting of, okay, rather than building that foundation, you're now going to be a part of the class that takes us from step B to step C.
Yeah, there might be a little bit more of that still at this point, but, I mean, the hope is absolutely to come in and fire on all cylinders for this season. And, you know, you can't have the expectation of, well, you're just going to go win a national championship right. Year one and things like that. But like we're saying is, if there's just a little bit of progress, then that's enough to look at it as, all right, then we're set. And it's time to continue to take these steps until you're at the point that you want to be, until you've hit the goals that you've set your sights on. And I mean, look, these high school kids, they understand it. They see it all now. And this isn't 15 to 20 years ago where nothing's out there. Everything's an open book now, it feels like, where you see it on social media, you see it in documentary, you see it on these TV broadcasts and during the games and everything like that. So now it really does matter. All right, this team is winning and things are looking up. So I'm really excited to see this trend continue and hope that the recruiting is able to stick through like this. And who knows, maybe sign a top 10 class in the nation and maybe a top 5 class in the SEC. Who knows what the ceiling is for this staff and how they're recruiting.
Jacob, I wanted to zoom out a little bit and look more at Auburn athletics as a whole, as with the College World Series wrapping up tonight, that means that the 2025-2026 athletic season in collegiate sports comes to a close. Talk to me about what Auburn was able to do this year and some highlights from golf or equestrian or whatever. Talk to me about what successes Auburn had on the field this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking at just the last month or so, it was so impressive. When you look at, obviously, the Men's Golf National Championship, we talked about that a lot here the past couple of weeks. Track and field, I mean, what a season for them, and specifically Jacoby Tharp. He set the world record at the National Championship. That's the first time someone has set a world record out in Eugene in about 50 years. And then he and his assistant coach, the sprints coach, Ken Harden, today they were just named USTFCCCA Men's Track Athlete of the Year and Assistant Coach of the Year. So, I mean, those honors are huge. Then you go to the women's tennis court where Jordan Szabo led that team to the national championship match. Just fell short to Texas A&M. But, I mean, that is a quick jump up to the national level for Coach Szabo and that program. Equestrian had another really successful year, making it to nationals. Men's basketball and Stephen Pearl's first year wins the NIT championship. And while it was a disappointment not to make the NCAA tournament, that team continued to fight and make its way through that NIT run, which was the big deal. And then, you know, you look at some of the other, women's golf had a successful season as well. Men's tennis, back on the tennis court, they were able to make a decent run at the SEC championships and in the NCAA championships as well. So overall, that's kind of the key. And then not to mention baseball hosting a second straight Super Regional for the first time ever. That's a high point as well. And setting all the attendance records that you possibly could. Six times this year, an attendance record was set at Plainsman Park. It was a midweek record against Georgia Tech. Then the all-time records were broken against Texas twice. And then obviously the regional championship and both Super Regional games topped those marks this past month. So it was really cool to see all of that transpire. We obviously learned about the Jordan-Hare North project. That's going to be it's underway now. If you drive by that north end zone, riding Tiger Transit or just walking around campus, you can see there's a lot of work being done there. And looking forward to all that culminating
Jacob Hillman,
in a few years.
Apologies. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network here with us. And final question before we let you get out of here on this Monday afternoon. The release of Ella Langley in part two of the Dandelion Tour coming to Neville Arena August 28th and 29th. Again, a really cool moment for her, I'm sure. Yes, being an Auburn student and being a lifelong Auburn fan, but a lot of excitement around Auburn, Alabama as well. Not only because of her, but with Parker McCollum, with Riley Green, with the Savannah Bananas, the Road to 26, and now getting a country superstar in Ella Langley. I mean, you feel like Auburn is becoming an international and an entertainment hotspot around the United States. Talk about the overall excitement, I guess, yes, with Ella Langley, but just what this continues to mean for the future of Auburn in terms of the entertainment industry.
Yeah, you're right. And then football bye week, you got Zach Bryan inside
Jordan-Hare Stadium. Yeah.
So much going on that will continue to go on. And part of this is it's an ongoing partnership with Peachtree Entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
They've been a huge asset for Auburn. And I mean, listen, when you've got probably the fastest rising country music star able to come to Neville Arena for two nights, that's a really awesome opportunity for this campus, for that building, for athletics, like you said. So, I mean, listen, I encourage everyone to try and make their way out there. I mean, look, I think it's one of those things where that's going to be a really tough ticket at this point.
Oh, yeah.
You can sign up for pre-sale at auburntigers.com. That story is right there at the top of the website, and you can follow the links there. But that's going to be really cool. And like you said, it's not just concerts. You've got the Road to 26 with the defending World Cup champions. You've got a memorabilia and card show coming in August that will also be in Neville Arena. So much going on this campus in these athletic facilities. It's so special and really benefits the Auburn family as well as the athletic department.
Well, Jacob Hillman, we appreciate your time as always. Again, I know with, tonight wrapping up the collegiate athletic, the fiscal year, not too much going in terms of Auburn athletics right now, but keep everybody, or I guess tell everybody where they can go to keep up with any information over the summer until next week when we get to talk with you again.
Yeah, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, at AU Sports Network. Obviously, Talking Tigers podcast still going strong with Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Today, it was an episode from 2020 with the late Paul Allen just discussing his beginnings with Auburn and everything that's gone into so many Auburn football game days, as well as basketball and baseball, as he was just a great part of our family for so many years. And just a great listen to hear his voice again and really reflecting on his entire career with the Auburn Sports Network.
Very well said, Mr. Hillman. Well, we greatly appreciate your time again, concreted with us at that Monday 3:30 time slot. We look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, we'll talk then, guys. War Eagle.
Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. Again, one of the longest guests here on the show, and very excited to continue to have him around and be able to get his knowledge, his insight every single week. We will take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the Monday edition of On the Line right after this.
You are on the line with Kristen Griffin and Tripp Upton on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and on the Radio Alabama app.
Back here on ESPN 106.7, wrapping up the Monday edition of On the Line. He is Triple Upton. I'm Christian Griffin. We appreciate everybody for being here with us. A really, really fun Monday. And there's usually so much to dive into, but the idea of, again, talking season is all but here. And the ability of us to still, at least in our minds, create a really fun, really enjoyable show for us to be able to continue giving as much knowledge as possible, but then also just to try and relate to everybody. And hopefully everybody was able to feel a little bit of that here this afternoon, talking the College World Series game one and game two. Game three tonight on ESPN. Trip, even after the show, still sticking with Oklahoma?
Yes, obviously. Why would I? Look, I've been 10 toes down since you know, for a couple weeks now. Of Oklahoma's a team to watch out for. They proved me right in the Super Regional. They proved me right in the first couple rounds of bracket play. And I hope they're going to prove me right tonight. Boomer Sooner. And the SEC continues their baseball dominance. I just can't pick against the SEC in baseball.
Understandably so. I have history being made on the other side with North Carolina finally being able to dogpile at the Chuck for the first time in program history. I expect it to be a really, really fun, really entertaining game. To wrap up the college sporting year 2025-2026, we also talked Dusty May leaving Michigan, what that means for the NCAA, what that means for college basketball, what that means for possibly the SEC, and just, again, the carryover effect of hiring new coaches and what that means with the transfer portal. We talked the entertainment industry with Ella Langley making two shows inside a Neville Arena. We talked Auburn recruiting, both the good and the bad, and what first-year head coaching recruiting can look like and has looked like for a couple of other head coaches, and how Alex Golish is well above the quote-unquote standard in that side of things. And a big thank you.